Today is the 30th of January, 2018. Yad Bishvat? What's Tu Bishvat?
Erev
Tu Bishvat. Okay. Yud Dalet Shvat Tavshin Ayin Ches. We are up to, perhaps to Bruce's chagrin, Halacha Day of Perek Yud Beis. But don't worry. What?
I thought we did that yesterday.
Well, listen, you know, you want to do Vayikra, and, you know, the next several parshias are going to be halachic in nature, so it's a little hard to get around understanding the Chumash without knowing some of the halacha that follows as well. But we will impose a little bit of Rishonim Day onto Halacha Day, okay? Because the Or HaChaim asks, in Pasuk Gimel, Vayom HaShmini, Yimo Besor Alessos. And the third parak says, on the eighth day, you're going to do a mila, you're going to cut the flesh of the orla, which is the mitzvah of mila. So the Or HaChaim says, why do we have this mitzvah stuck in over here? We already have the mitzvah of mila. Where did we learn the mitzvah of mila before?
Avram,
right? There is already a commandment that is imposed upon Avram, implying also that it is ledoros, for all generations. And we... And that's where the mitzvah is. So why do we need an additional pasuk here? It's not really necessary for these things. So there are, if one looks through the Gemaras, it goes, so... Yes? Yeah, this is a mitzvah in here, in the middle of nowhere, right? So there are two...
7 days. I mean, she's had 7 days. On the eighth day, she's got something to do.
Yeah. So why is this here? So and why couldn't it have been taught there? So the Gemara says, actually learns out two main halachos that come from the mitzvah here, from these psukim. Number one is that the idea that Mila is Docha Shabbos, which is going to be the topic today. That the idea that if there's the eighth day falls out on Shabbos, so then you do the Bris Mila even though it's Shabbos, and even though a Bris Mila inherently includes within it a malacha. What malacha does it inherently include?
Cutting.
That is not it. What? Bloodletting, right? That's one possibility. And there's, I believe, there's four possibilities as to what the malacha is. Cutting would not be, no, I mean, not in this way. Cutting doesn't fit within this category.
Cutting flesh.
Right, so either it's shochet that you're laying blood out. Number two, according to the Rambam, it is what he refers to as mefarik, that you're squeezing blood out like dush. You're squeezing something out like squeezing an orange juice. You're taking blood out. The other two possibilities, one is gozes. She quotes the idea that it's like gozes is like shearing wool off of a sheep. So it's a similar action. Or number four, possibility is that it's machba patish, and that you're concluding the person. Okay, so those are the four passages of what malacha it is, but everybody agrees that there's some malacha involved, and there has to be some heter that permits one to do it. So that's what's being learned out from this pasuk. The other thing that's being learned out from this pasuk is the connection to Nida. What is the connection to Nida? So the Gemara points out that the Gemara also in Masechet Shabbos, in Rabbi Elazar de Mila, in the Perek discussing Mila in Masechet Shabbos, so points out that it is after the conclusion of the Dam Yoledes, after the conclusion of the blood that a woman has when she gives birth. So the Gemara says, only if she has birthing blood. So how could you possibly give birth to a child and not have, quote-unquote, birth blood? If you have a cesarean section. So the Gemara suggests, and there are, it's machlokas tanayim, and it's machlokas in the Gemara itself, whether a C-section baby would have their bris on Shabbos. And there's two sides to that machlokas. Why would you not? So because perhaps it has no connection to having the bris on day 8. So is it that it's on day 8, and therefore it would superimpose itself on Shabbos? Or perhaps it's, doesn't, you don't even have to wait till day 8 if it's in the case of a C-section, in which case you would not do it on Shabbos. So we're machmer both ways. We're machmer A, that we wait till the 8th day, even though it was a C-section. On the other hand, if that 8th day falls out on Shabbos, you're not going to have a bris on that day. There's also an attachment to that din, and that is that there's a Rabbeinu Chananel Maseches Chagiga that seems to imply that it, not only is it a unnatural delivery, but even if it was an unnatural conception. So what would be an unnatural conception? The Immaculate Conception, what would that be?
Rape.
No, rape is natural conception, it's just not what? Oh, artificial insemination or IVF. If you do one of those types of dinim, so then it is a very... So there are certainly Rishonim I shouldn't say Rishonim, they didn't necessarily conceive of these things, but the implication from that would be that you wouldn't have a bris on Shabbos in those scenarios either. So that actually gets a little bit more complicated, because it's easy to say, well, there's a C-section, there's no bris on Shabbos, but if everybody knows the baby was born on Shabbos, and now we say, okay, why is the bris not on Shabbos? I don't know. So there is a focus whether we apply this or not. Meaning, is that really considered unnatural conception? That I think we discussed this in one of the halacha shirim in Sefer Bereishis. I remember when we had the shirim on this several years ago, Ray Willick said that in these situations he tells people just to say the baby is yellow and hold it off to the next day. That's just, you say the baby's yellow, nobody knows what that means anyways, and okay, fine, it's a good excuse to hold off the bris until Sunday. You save money on the food also. Okay, so, and you don't have to put anyone up for Shabbos. You don't have to put as many people up for Shabbos. Alright, so with that in mind, so the Or HaChaim says, okay, so very nice that we learn out these extra halachos here, the halacha that you're overriding Shabbos. But the Or HaChaim says, why don't we just put that pasuk there? So just put this pasuk up, put that in Bereishis, and everything will be consumed in one particular spot. So for, he doesn't say this, but there is a Gemara, I believe, that says that every mitzvah that is taught before Matan Torah is taught again after Matan Torah. He didn't mention this, but I recall seeing this Gemara, I didn't track it down. But the two things that the Or HaChaim does say, although they seem to be somewhat connected with one another, is that if you have told Avram Avinu that Mila is Doche Shabbos, Avram would have looked at you like you're crazy. Why? What would Avram Avinu's question to you have been? By the way, this Mila that I'm commanding you to do now, you would do it even if it comes on, even if the eighth day falls on Shabbos. So what would, according to the Pshat of the Chumash, what would Avram's response to that be?
Would do it when they're 100 years old?
No, he would be, what's Shabbos? Shabbos wasn't commanded yet. Now, yes, it's true that we have an idea that the Avos kept all the mitzvos, etc. But the Or HaChaim says, yes, but they kept them as what we refer to as a Eino Mitzuvah V'osa. They kept it as somebody who wasn't commanded in the mitzvah, and yet was doing the mitzvah anyways. So if that's the case, so obviously if you have a mitzvah that you're commanded in versus a mitzvah that you're not commanded in, obviously the mitzvah that you're commanded in would win out. So according to Avram Avinu, if you asked Avram, a baby was born on the Hilug of Shabbos, should we have the bris the following Shabbos? Avram's first question would be, well, is it a boy? And then his question would be, if it's a boy, so then his answer, then he would say, of course, why would we even have a Havamina otherwise? So therefore it only makes sense to have that mitzvah later on. The second thing that the Or HaChaim says is, it seems to be, I'm not sure what exactly the difference is, but he says it just wouldn't make sense otherwise. And if you would do that, I mean, let's say you would kind of impose this pasuk there, even without that idea, you would have what he says, v'im haya mitzvah hayu mishtavrin hakumasim alev. The writers would break their kumuses, their quills, over trying to figure out what in the world, why is this here, why is it not later on the Chumash? So either way, you're going to run into a problem. So the mitzvah of Mila, as it applies after Matan Torah, and that it would override Shabbos, therefore it makes sense that it would be later on. Okay, so again, what do we learn out from this pasuk? So we actually learn out, there's three possibilities as to what we learn out from this pasuk. We mentioned two already. One of them is the idea that Mila is Docha Shabbos. Okay, that's number one. The second thing that we learn out from this, the Gemara points out, is that only a Mila that is a natural delivery would you have the bris on Shabbos? If not, then you wouldn't. And then the third thing that's learned out from this is the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says that we learn out from here, that the obligation to make a bris for one's child is incumbent upon the parent. That's what the Yerushalmi says. So, is that a little bit odd? So yes, because the Gemara in Maseches Kedushin actually learns out that from the Pasuk by Avram Avinu. The Gemara in Kedushin, Daf Chaf Tatana Amar Aleph, in the discussion of mitzvahs that are incumbent upon a parent for a child and a child for a parent, that's where the Kibbut Avaim Sugyas are. We started Shir last night in Beth HaMedrash on the topic of Kibbut Avaim. So there the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan Avchai Bivno Lemol Ifto. So the father is obligated for the son to give him a bris and to do pidyon aben. How do we know that? Dichsiv Vayimol Avram Es Yitzhak Beno. That Avram gave Yitzhak his son a bris. So if Avram gave Yitzhak his son a bris, so the obligation is incumbent upon the father. The pasuk doesn't say Yitzhak had a bris by way of his father. It said Avram gave his son a bris because the responsibility is imposed upon the father to take care of his son. The Gemara goes on and says that the father didn't do it, so then you... The Beis Din goes ahead and does it, and if the child is older and the parent didn't do it, so the kid himself is chayef to do it to himself. But there is the starting point is that the father is obligated to give a bris to his son.
Didn't he give a bris to the whole family, or wasn't just his son?
Well, that's following. I believe that's following this. I don't remember what the order is over there. To give you Shmuel first, and then to Yitzhak later. But this is where he's commanded that for generations that people are going to do it like Yitzhak did it. So that is a bit of a question. Why is it that the Yushami learns it out from this pasuk, when the Bavli learns it out from that pasuk? And the question is made even greater because the Rambam himself seems to list the Yerushalmi's pasuk, list this pasuk as the source that the father is obligated to give his son a bris. That is found in the Rambam has really two places where he lists off the 613 mitzvos, all of them from beginning to end. One is he has the Sefer HaMitzvos, where he divides up positive mitzvos and negative mitzvos and lists them off and gives you a paragraph of each. And then in the beginning of the Mishnah Torah, the beginning of the Rambam's law book, so he lists off very briefly all 613 mitzvahs. And there, mitzvah Resh Tes Vav says, Kasav Rambam Lamol Es Haben Shneamar Uviyom Hashmini Yimo Basor Aleso. That there's a mitzvah to give the son a bris, as it says, on the eighth day you give a bris to your son. Which is unusual because the Rambam doesn't really quote sources there. He's just listening off the mitzvahs. But for some reason, he felt compelled to include the pasuk as part of that mitzvah. What makes it even more interesting is that in the Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam does not quote this pasuk. The Rambam seems to quote the pasuk of the Bavli from Avram Avinu. So what exactly happened there? Why did the Rambam feel compelled to include this pasuk when he didn't use it in the Sefer HaMitzvos? So I'm not sure what the answer is to that question, but certainly what is the status of this pasuk with regards to the mitzvah that is incumbent upon the father? What does the Bavli disagree with the Yerushalmi? If so, why does the Rambam seem to paskin like the Yerushalmi over the Bavli? That's a question to spend two then moments on. Yeah.
This pasuk doesn't say anything about the father. Right? I mean, it just says,
in the eighth day of the flesh,
his foreskin shall be circumcised.
Good question. So
it's talking about the woman. And they throw in this pasuk, which is
right. How do you Yerushalmi figure it out? That's a good question. So Yom Shmi Yimol Mikan Sha'av. This is Yerushalmi Mikan Sha'av Mitzvah Al Bino Lamola. That the father is commanded on the son to give him a bris. Okay. Yimol, that what's the word yimol? That this I'm not the best TikTok guy, but the yimol, the basar of the orla of the child will be brist. I think that's the technical term. So how will it be brist? That means that somebody has to do the brising.
Somebody.
Right. So how do you know that it's the father? That's a good question. I hear. I'm looking at the Torah Tamimah here. He doesn't seem to address it, but good question. Take a look at the Yerushalmi in the Sefes Kedushin. Yeah. All right. So the Minchas Ashi here gives, with regards to that question of why would we prefer that pasuk over this pasuk, I see the Torah Tamimah asks the question as well, but the Minchas Ashi provides two answers. One, the complicated answer, and one, the simple answer. So, of course, we should talk about the complicated answer first. All right? Why would it be that that we prefer that pasuk over this? See, he suggests the following idea, that there is a a bris is going to override the Shabbos. So if I were to ask you, before we learned this pasuk together, if I were to ask you, tell me, why do you think we would have a bris on Shabbos, even though it's a malacha to do a bris on Shabbos? What would your answer be? Do you know? There's a klal, there's a rule in halacha called Asay Docha Lotase, come across that at all? Right, that a positive mitzvah overrides a negative mitzvah. If you have a positive mitzvah to do something in particular, so that over and you have to do it in this particular way. The only way you're going to do this positive mitzvah is by overriding the prohibition, so that it beats out the prohibition on Shabbos. Hence, we have this rule called Asi Docha Lotase. So why does an Asi Docha Lotase? So why does the Gemara need a special pasuk and not just say Asi Docha Lotase? So the Gemara itself raises that idea that we should give a bris on Shabbos because of Asi Docha Lotase. Lotase says, well, no, because you're actually overriding two things. It's an that, yes, it's true, ase is docha lotase, a positive mitzvah beats out a negative mitzvah, but Shabbos is actually a ase and a lotase. It's a positive and a negative mitzvah to observe the Shabbos, and you're beating out both. If you're beating out both, that doesn't work. Ein ase docha lotase v'ase. Hence, the Gemara says you need to come up with this pasuk. But the Gemara still has a question that is this, and is actually a machlokas rishonim, that this idea that one gives a bris on Shabbos, there's two rules, we talked about this in the past, the idea of hutra or dechuya. We come across those terms. Hutra means that it is completely permissible. Ah, shalom. Dechuya means that, well, you're not really allowed to do it, but because, we'll provide dispensation for you to do it. Meaning, one idea is that, well, Shabbos doesn't exist anymore. Once we come to the idea of doing the bris, so Shabbos isn't applicable. There's no rules of Shabbos anymore. Do whatever you need in order to do whatever you want, really, in terms of getting the bris done. Well, the other rule is, well, Shabbos still exists, will only permit you to do that which is absolutely necessary in order to get the bris done. What's the practical ramification? So this, there is actually a dispute on the page of Shulchan Aruch about whether you can be mechubud a second person with doing the bris with you. Right? Just without getting into total hilchos mila, I'll say that for another time. But there is different. There's a mila and there's a priya. There's where you cut off and then there's where you roll back. Potentially you could be mechabi two molim with the same thing. So suggests the mechaber go. Suggests the Rama go ahead and do that. Bring in two molim to do whatever you want. It's not an issue. While the Mechaber says no, and the Vilna Gaon also says no, we're going to restrict the violation of Shabbos as little as possible, right? And therefore, only one moel is permitted to do it. You can't interrupt in the middle in order to bring somebody else in. The assumption being that therefore we would say that Shabbos is the violation of Shabbos is dechuya, and that is our general assumption when it comes to things that one would violate the Shabbos for instance, a person, there's some kind of danger to somebody's life, our assumption is that it's what we call dechuya, as opposed to hutra. It doesn't mean that Shabbos doesn't exist anymore. Right? Somebody is sick, so therefore I'm going to do whatever I want, I can do whatever I want to bring it to Shabbos. No, we still, at every step of the way, try to limit the malacha that is done along the way. That's an important rule to keep in mind. So asks...
An argument could be made Shabbos doesn't exist also because the bris is an eternal covenant between us and Hashem.
Okay.
Transcends time.
Okay. Right. So it could be even though there is a even though right, it could be that there might be a unique halacha by Mila, that Mila we're gonna call it a hutra din. Yeah, you can make that case. There's a couple of possibilities why that would be. That you would call it hutra as opposed to dechuya, but we paskin that it's dechuya. That's the way we assume. Comes the Minchas Asher and says, "Tell me something. If it's dechuya, so why should we permit a moel to do the bris at all? Right? There's other ways of getting a mila done. Right? What would be another way of getting a mila done? Well, a doctor would still be it has to be done by a Jew, right? So So either the doctor is going to have the same problem that the mole is going to have. But what is a way of getting it done on Shabbos, not having a malacha violated? So he suggests, well, I'll give you two possibilities. One he does suggest, maybe have it done by a non-Jew with a Jew standing there. Right? A mir la'akum for a bris. Right? If a Jew is standing over him, you can make a case that that's okay, potentially. Or another potential is have a child do it, a katan do it. So it's the same type of issue. Right. Again, it's the same type of issue, but we're talking about whether you could potentially get it done that way. Meaning, potentially, we could do it this way and not violate the Malacha on Shabbos. So why is it that we're permitted to do the Malacha on Shabbos even and not go with one of these possible ideas? You could also maybe say, do it kalachar, yeah, do it in a back. But, yeah.
A child, you mean under 13
yeah.
years old?
Yeah. Have a child do it. So he suggests, because the mitzvah of the only way we could say, no, the only way we could say that you would do it on Shabbos and not in violation and not have to go with one of these ideas is if the mitzvah is not on the child but rather on the father. Right? It only makes sense to say this if the father is the one responsible to do it. If the father is the one responsible to do it, so then it has to be that he can go ahead and do it. That's one suggestion that the Minchas Asher has. Because the idea of Mila is Dechuya, we should be, in theory, we should be seeking ways to have the bris done without having an outright violation of Melacha on Shabbos. The fact that we don't go ahead and do that indicates that the mitzvah is not on the child, but rather on the father. And if it's the father's mitzvah, then he would go ahead and do the mitzvah as necessary. That's idea number one. So therefore what? So there is therefore, when we go to our pasuk here in Parshas Tezria, so the pasuk is what we learn out the idea that when we do a bris on Shabbos. So suggests was Rav Asher Weiss. The fact that you are chayiv to do it on Shabbos also indicates to us, according to now the Yerushalmi, also indicates to us that who is the one who is really responsible for the mila? The father. That's answer number one. Answer number two is just simply that yes, it's true Avram is commanded to do the bris mila, but it's a little unclear how that is supposed to be transposed upon everybody for generations to come. So the real source for the mitzvah of Mila really is going to be from here, is Parshas Tezria. So therefore he suggests they're really saying the same thing, that yes, it's true, Avram was commanded, and Avram has some of the details as to how it's done, but it doesn't get off the ground as a mitzvah for all generations until you get to the Parsha in Tezria. So therefore that pasuk is really what's going to include the idea that the father is the one who is responsible. Another thing that Rav Asher Weiss discusses here is the following, is a kasha from the Maharam Bennett. Who's the Maharam Bennett? Anyone know? I didn't think so. Didn't know either. He lived late 1700s, early 1800s, lived in Hungary. He was the Rav in Nikolsburg. He was a good friend of the Chassam Sofer, who was masped him. So he asks, that according to, again, what we mentioned before, what malacha are you in fact violating by doing a bris milah? So one idea is the idea of shechita. Okay, leave that aside. The Rambam says that your violation is that of mefarik, that you're separating blood out from the body. It's like you're threshing out, so to speak. So asks the Maharam Bennett, wait a second, we have rules about that. We have rules about threshing. How much does one have to thresh in order for one to violate a malacha on Shabbos? A grogeris. What's a grogeris? Amount of a dried fig. Okay, so whatever amount is. How much blood comes out when a baby has his bris?
Less.
Not, right? Less. Or we hope less. Hopefully less. Right? So how are you violating the malacha in the first place? Right. What malach? How could you say you're violating the malacha mafarik if you're not actually violating the malacha mafarik? Again, the rabbanon you'd have to be careful, but the rice on a biblical level, which is where we're talking here, we're talking about a source in the Torah, etc. So then, how do you understand that Rambam? How are you actually violating the din? So it suggests the Maharam Bennett says, well, there is something called achshave, which is a very important concept. What does achshave mean? Achshave means that I look at it and give it a higher status than it otherwise would have had. Okay, so an example of that would be on Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur, there in theory, one is permitted, or Pesach, this comes up. What is permitted, this is the whole medicine issue on Yom Kippur and Shabbos, that if one is, if one eats things that are eno roi lachilas kelev, that aren't fit for the, that aren't edible to a dog, so that's not considered eating. However, suggests some achronim, but wait a second, we have a concept called achshave. I think the Gemara itself makes this point, but I don't deal with this in terms of modern day applications. We have a cut that if you actually are machshavit, right, you say, no, that's not dog food, that's something, some fancy French name. Right? And you actually are machshavit, say, I'm going to call that human food, so then you have actually raised it up to the level of being human food. So that gets into the issue of medication. So what's the issue with medication? So medication, in theory, is not eno roi lachilas kelev, so to speak. And we're saying, but I'm going to consume it for my purposes. So are you doing machshavei to those things. So the Aris and Achronis said, oh, therefore you can't take pills on these days. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva, and most modern day poskim assume, he says, no, you're not being machshavit as food when you're taking medicine, you're being machshavit as something that you swallow. You're not actually eating it, you're just swallowing it, and therefore it's still not considered, it's not an issue of achshavei. So Maharam Bennett here is pointing out that there's really two different concepts of achshavei. One is when a person is machshavit, or the second idea is when halacha is machshavit. Meaning, it's really not considered enough blood for it to be violation of a malacha on Shabbos. However, because that there is blood necessary for a bris milah to take place, the Torah considers that blood as a significant amount of blood. That's what's going on here. Right? That's required. There has to be blood when there's a bris. The Torah is going to consider that as dam. He continues on, Rav Asher Weiss continues on and discusses this in the context of the other ideas as well, but maybe we'll point to something else. I think I have just a couple of other details with regards to Bris on Shabbos. One fascinating detail is the issue of Mitzitza. We may know in this room that there's a major machlokas. Major machlokas. You're a pediatrician, right? You're an eye doctor. There's a major issue when it comes to mitzitza. What's the issue? So the Gemara says that besides doing the cutting of a bris milah, there's also an idea of sucking out the blood. Why do you have to suck out the blood? Because if you don't suck out the blood, so it's going to be considered very dangerous for the child. So therefore you should go ahead and suck out the blood. Now, doctors have kind of looked at this and scratched their heads and say, wait a second, the sucking out of the blood itself is what is dangerous to the child, because there could be infections that is going to go from the moel, the one doing this process, to the child, and therefore it can endanger the child. So this has raised huge, huge disputes in the Orthodox world over the last several decades, with the more right-wing / Hasidic world saying, no, the Torah says you have to mitzitza, while the more called modern world says, the Gemara only says that has to do with refuah. If the doctors have proven otherwise nowadays, so then that's it. The doctors have proven otherwise, so don't do that, do this. Fine. So that machlokas could exist on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, with only ramifications towards the child. Right? But where it becomes an even more interesting machlokas is then when it shows up on Shabbos, because the sucking of the blood itself is a malacha on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, well, do it anyways, because the child's life is in danger, so you should go ahead and do this mitzitza. Okay, so what the Gemara essentially is telling you to do is violate a malacha d'oraisa, because the child is in danger. The only way the child is going to be able to safely have a bris on Shabbos is if you do mitzitza, right? It's part of the process. So therefore, even though it's a malacha on Shabbos, go ahead and do it. But if you assume that, no, that's only a technical safety thing, and that technical safety thing doesn't apply bizman hazeh to nowadays, so how can you say to go ahead and do it on Shabbos? There's machlokas about doing it during the week, because there are some shuls, there are some rabbis that will not permit it at all. You can't do this in my shul, I don't want to be responsible for the baby. While there's other rabbis and shuls that will say, you have to do it here, otherwise you're an apikoros, right? Otherwise you're a heretic. But it becomes an even bigger issue when you have a bris on Shabbos because of the added malacha factor that shows up on Shabbos. Okay, that's the 3-minute summary with regards to that issue. There's a couple of other distinctions, things that happen on Shabbos that wouldn't happen during the week, having to do with preparations and stuff, but maybe we'll have to save that for another time. Okay, have a good day. Thank you for coming. Yes.
I spoke to
Yes, I got a note. Shkaya, thank you.